It's 8:18 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, after a tie vote and then some back and forth, the Steinville Planning Commission, as we reported, eventually did vote 5-1 to approve the in-home massage therapy business in Silver Summit. Just one of the topics at Tuesday's Steinville Basin Planning Commission meeting. In the studio with a recap, I have Commissioner Melina Stevens. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So my understanding is that this massage therapy business is an allowed use in this zone?
It is, yes. With a low-impact permit is the requirement, but it is an allowed use.
Yeah. So why such a difficult decision, then, you think, for the Planning Commission?
Well, I think that there are some commission members that were trying to mitigate some of their perceived impacts, and the rest of us felt that they could be mitigated just by the county code and what's already being done.
Yeah. And I guess just, is it a case of buyer beware, kind of knowing what is allowed in a neighborhood before you buy into it?
I think that that's definitely something for people to be aware of. There's a lot of uses that are allowed in rural residential areas that people wouldn't necessarily think if they hadn't read the code. So reading the code, I think, is a very important step. Also, that is one reason why, as a commission and as a planning staff, we're currently starting to go through the code to look at all those uses, see what's appropriate, and see if there's better ways to message that as well. So that's something to stay tuned for.
All right. Some neighbors feel like it's a commercial intrusion on the neighborhood. I mean, do you feel that way? I mean, do you feel like the uses that would be allowed under a low impact permit are okay as is?
I mean, I don't live in that neighborhood, so I can't speak for those neighbors and how they would feel. But I will say that it is an allowed use, and the impacts, according to what we approve, should be minimal. It's just 4 cars, essentially, per day maximum. Not even, I mean, it could be less than that, coming into the neighborhood. And really, I mean, there's a lot of people with lots of kids or teenagers that generate more trips than that every day. So I think that it'll be minimal with the nature of the business being massage therapy. It's not going to be loud or intrusive. So I think that it will work out well the way that we've approved it.
Yeah. Did the conditions of approval require it to come back to Planning Commission for a review after a certain amount of time, or?
As I understand it, the only way that we would see it again would be if there was some sort of violation of the conditions that we placed, and it rose to a level that we had to have a show cause type of hearing before the Planning Commission. But from what I understand, those are pretty rare.
All right. And the car idling, I mean, do you think that's going to be a problem? Or any more so than any other neighbors?
I mean, yeah. And I guess that was my opinion during this, was that car idling is an issue within the county in general. By nature of kind of our climate in the wintertime, it's cold. And if you have your kids or your dog or somebody in the car, you're probably not going to turn off your car. I think that the county and the city have been pretty proactive about how they want to handle that. I personally just felt that we need to approach that from a more countywide legislative manner than piecing it off one person at a time that may or may not be a little subjective.
All right. Now, with the aim of preserving night skies over the basin, the Planning Commission also discussed some proposals to update lighting technology. Is it a sustainability issue or a dark sky issue or both?
I think actually it's probably more of a code issue. As I stated previously, that we're going through and we're revising the code currently to bring it up to speed more so with current trends and latest technology. So I guess both of what you said, we're trying to update the code so that it's more in line with LED and some of the other technologies that weren't available when the code was written and aren't mentioned there.
Yeah. So what are the impacts, and if everyone needs to bring their fixtures into compliance in at least 7 years? I mean, I guess light bulbs burn out between then.
Yeah.
And
that hasn't been decided yet. We haven't voted on that. That's still something that we're working through to kind of determine what that's going to look like for people. And then once we decide what that's going to look like, then we'll figure out the messaging and how we're going to get that out and how you know, maybe we can partner with some private entities to help with that. There's lots of options.
So it's not just about bulbs. It's really about the fixtures themselves and which way they direct the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we want fixtures that are closed off on the top so that they're not emitting light upwards. Also, I guess that has become more common within the basin that we have those types of fixtures. One thing that we want to attack as well is where the light is being directed down, partially for efficiency, that it's being directed down in a more concise manner so that people can see more easily, but also so that it's not straying to the sides as it is right now.
All right, let's see. Accessory buildings. Do you think regulations are an intrusion on private property rights? That was kind of the discussion Tuesday.
And I think that's what we're trying to balance. We hear the neighbors, and there's been in several of the different applications that we've had over the recent past that have dealt with accessory buildings, it seems to be a common theme that, again, people hadn't read the code or didn't understand what was allowed uses and that people currently could have as many accessory buildings as they could fit on their property, essentially, within the parameters that are stated. But we want to be able to thoroughly look at that and make sure that we are listening to those neighbors, but that we're following the code. And if there's something that needs to be looked at as we're rewriting the code, I think that's why we're really trying to take this right now and really look at the totality of the situation. But we absolutely are balancing that and making sure that we're not impeding on people's property rights, which is very important.
Yeah. At this point, I think staff is recommending that there would be a maximum of 3 accessory buildings allowed per lot.
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty reasonable, I think, to the Planning Commission, or?
I think, again, we're still working on this application. We haven't made any decisions. Where we're at right now is we wanted to, going back to kind of the discussion of property rights and also just with property sizes, I think we were concerned that perhaps 3 might be appropriate in some areas, but if someone has 20 acres, perhaps 3, you know, maybe they could reasonably have more on their lot without it looking like there's just roof lines.
Yeah. And as Commission Chairwoman B. Peck put it, it appears to be a solution looking for a problem, I guess just questioning whether or not this is really an issue, or is it just a loud vocal minority?
I mean, that's one thing we're trying to look at. A lot of neighborhoods in the basin don't experience this problem because they have active HOAs that mitigate those problems. So there's just really a couple of neighborhoods that are seeing problems here because of the lack of HOA. So, I mean, there's probably other ways that people could organize and deal with these issues outside of Planning Commission and some of these other governmental avenues, but we don't have any control over that. So,
all right. Also, during work session, the Planning Commission discussed the application for a coffee shop on Highway 224 in an historic building, the Planning Commission being asked to determine if the building is historically significant. So if it is, how would that impact the proposed redevelopment plans?
Well, that's really the first step. So if we deem the building is not historical, then the project cannot go forward. So that's why we're trying to be diligent, and we're going to do a site visit here in the near future and look at the entire site, make sure that with the plans that they have drawn up that it speaks to the historic nature of the structure, if that's what we determine, and that it's not changing the structure so much that it takes away any historic farmhouse value that it does have.
So I understand this correctly, if it is historically significant, it could have a reuse.
Yes.
If it's found not to be historically significant, it has to remain a house? Or I don't.
They couldn't have the commercial use. So currently they're trying to change the use to commercial in the Hillside Stewardship Zone. That's not an allowed use under the code unless it's deemed a historic structure. And then from the way I understand it, it becomes kind of a trade-off that in order for the county to preserve that building, we allow them to repurpose it so that they have an incentive to maintain and restore the structure.
So is this something similar that happened with like the Bill White Farm?
Yes.
So that was deemed historically significant, which then allowed him some of the additional.
From what I understand, I was not on the commission at that time, so I don't want to give inaccurate information. But from what I understand, that was the process he went through.
Okay. So as you head out on this field trip, I mean, what is it that you'll be looking for?
When we do site visits, typically it's so that we can gain a better understanding of where things are on the site, what the site looks like. I mean, you can only get so much information from photos. I mean, I guess the same idea of when you're buying a house, right? You want to go and actually look at the property and get a feel for the whole area and not just a few photos prior to purchasing. So for us, that's been important in the past and given a lot of insight into projects, both what they're going to look like, where spatially things would be, what, I mean, with this in particular, what the structure currently looks like. If we think that they could restore some of the wood that is there, just a lot of different things that really are more, you know, touch, feel, see that we need to be on site for.
So are they proposing a drive-through coffee shop, or this would be a parking lot and you have to get in and out?
This would be a parking lot. Yeah, the structure is far too small for that.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for coming in. That's Melina Stevens, a member of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Well, the deadline to pay your property taxes to Summit County is coming up. On the phone, I have Summit County Treasurer Corey Forsling. Good morning, Corey.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So what is the deadline? The end of the month?
It is Friday, November 30th.
Okay. Now, are these taxes being paid? Are they for the current year, 2018, or for next year, 2019?
They are for the current year. In Utah, we bill for the current year at the end of the year. Kind of an odd plan, but that's how we do it. And it's only once a year. A lot of people that move into the state from other areas think it's twice a year or more, but here it's just once a year.
All right. And it's the same for every county. Wasatch County would be the same. Taxes due November 30th.
That's a state law. Yeah.
Okay. What happens if you don't pay your taxes by the 30th?
Well, we attach a 1% penalty the next day, and then you basically have a 60-day grace period. And if they're still not paid by January 31st, we add an additional 1.5% penalty. And then we start to accrue interest on February 1st. And this is also dictated by state law.
Okay. And you have as many as 5 years to pay, actually pay?
Well, we'd rather you pay right away. But if you don't pay, if this whole 5 years go by and you don't pay, then we are going to sell the property in a tax sale in May of the next year. So next year's tax sale in 2019 would require that your taxes from 2014 are paid. And if you have a few years of back taxes, you can't come in and pay the 2014s. You have to pay in reverse chronological. So you got to pay the 2018, 17, 16, all the way back until you get to the 2014s. And then that'll get you off the hook.
Okay. And then the interest continues to accrue for that.
It's sure
first
does.
Of the 5 years.
Sure does. There were 7.5% this year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So not cheap.
It's pretty high.
Yeah. Yeah. We heard from Park City Council member Tim Henney last week. He told us that his property taxes are actually less than they were 5 years ago. He noted that his property has not been reassessed in those 5 years. So how would the rest of us go about finding that out?
Well, the first place to look is your tax bill, just to look at what they are this year and see what your value is. And if you happen to have old copies of the tax bill, which nobody does, then you can look at your values from previous years. You can also call us, and you can also look online. Our website is summitcounty.org/treasurer. And if you search either by your name or by your address, then you can pull up your property, and you can see past year's receipts. Receipts will show what your values and your taxes were. You can change the date and look at what your previous year's values were. I would say that just strictly anecdotally, Tim's experience is unusual this year. In most cases, I'm seeing increases. Although I'll have to say 90% of the time, the increase is due to a value increase. So it's their property taxes are increasing because the value is increasing, not necessarily because of the tax rate increases that we had for the school district and for the general and municipal rates.
Right. Again, if his property hasn't been reassessed in 5 years, he can probably count on it being reassessed in 2019?
I would think so. I would refer him to the assessor's office to confirm when it is due, but in general,
yeah,
it would be every 5 years at the maximum.
Okay, right. And they just go neighborhood to neighborhood, I think, right? And look
at
comps.
Yeah, they don't actually go inside the properties, but they do visit the outside and they measure.
All right. On average, what kind of percentage do you see in delinquencies?
Our 1 year collection rate, and when we count the collection rate, we're really looking at what's collected in November of that year. We're at around 96%. By the end of the following year, we're 98%, 99%. And then, of course, we get 100% collection within that 5 years. But the only rate that really counts is what happens in that first year in November. And we're generally, it varies by community, but we're generally around 96.
Okay. Again, if somebody doesn't pay within that 5 years, it goes to a sheriff's sale then? The property sold for back taxes?
It's the tax sale, which is not handled by the sheriff. That's if you default on your mortgage, then you might go through a sheriff's sale. But for a tax sale, it's actually handled by the county auditor, Michael Howard. And that happens in the courthouse in May of every year. And honestly, we have very few properties that get to that point, especially if you have a primary home. If you live in the property that you've had a hard time paying taxes for, we really try and help you through the process and give you opportunities to make sure those taxes are paid.
Okay.
We don't want anyone to lose their house.
And how many challenges this year from people on their tax bill?
I believe we had about 600. That comes through the auditor's office as well, the Board of Equalization, but around 600. So it wasn't a really, for us, a very high number.
Oh, it seems like a lot, no?
Well, relative to past years.
Yeah. And again, is it that they're arguing that they think their taxes are too high and then you have to go about, you know, doing comparables? Or is it that they're complaining that they're being charged as a second resident instead of a primary residence? Or how do those break out?
Well, those are pretty easy to fix. If you have a primary home and it came across on the bill or on the evaluation notice that it wasn't a primary home, we can fix that. So you wouldn't need to go through the full appeal process. And actually, if you have a tax bill and you think it's supposed to be primary and it's not, the deadline for that is November 30th. So we're still taking those applications every day. And you can call my office or you can contact the assessor's office and they'll process that for you. But it has to be turned in by November 30th.
Okay. And again, it's some account in terms of the entities that you're collecting property taxes for. I mean, it's not just Summit County. It's Park City Municipal. It's the Park City School Board, School District. It's the state.
Mm-hmm.
How many entities?
The Fire District, mm-hmm. Niagara Basin Recreation District, mosquito abatement, the South Summit and North Summit School Districts and Fire Districts. So all of those entities we collect for. And then we distribute the funds by the 10th of December.
Okay. And again, that's just done electronically, those reimbursements?
That's correct. It's all calculated and processed. An exciting job I have. We do that by the 10th of every month. And there's obviously a big payment by December 10th. And then it decreases all through the year. And then we run it once again in November of next year.
Yeah. And the largest collector of the property tax, of course, the local school districts, they have what? A number they know to expect based on what? The assessed value and times the tax rate? Is that how they do it?
Yes. So for every single taxing entity, there is a number. And it's calculated. It's a formula that the state allows you to come to the certified tax rate. And the certified tax rate is applied to the values, and then that's the dollar amount you can expect to receive unless you go through a truth in taxation process, in which case that formula is allowed to increase. But there's a fixed number, so we go out and we bill that number, and then, like I said, we get, depending on the area, the larger towns have higher collection rates than smaller towns, but we get that 96% in November.
Okay. And finally, you're attending the Utah Association of Counties Conference. Anything interesting there?
Well, that's where I am right now. It's really a great opportunity for all of the administrative offices to meet, sharpen their skills, learn what other counties are doing, learn what other states are doing, and make sure that we're keeping ahead with the trends and the opportunities that are available. I'd like to say one thing. This year we have a new payment platform that allows property owners to create user accounts, and they can establish their own payment method, payment dates if they want to make monthly payments, want to arrange an annual payment so they don't forget next year. All that's available on this platform.
Okay, Corey, hey, anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's it for now.
Okay, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Treasurer Corey Forsling. Again, all of you listening, again, if you own property, your taxes are due by Friday, November 30th. Well, the annual Park City Board of Realtors Turkey Drive kicks off today in the studio in Fort Regalia. I have the event's longtime organizer, Deb Hartley, dressed as a turkey. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and gobble, gobble.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad you're back in costume.
Yes, I am.
Give us
too
some
bad your listeners can't see.
I know. Well, I'm going to post the photos. So,
perfect.
Yeah, give me a minute. So give us some background. I mean, this is, I think, what, the 17th?
This is the 17th year. Can you believe it? Every year, I'm just blown away by how long we've been doing this. So the first year that we did this, we collected 50 turkeys. And now, for the last 3 or 4 years, we have been collecting and distributing throughout the state 2,500 turkeys a year. Is that crazy? Of which 850 stay right here in Summit and Wasatch counties. And who would think in a community as, quite honestly, as affluent as Park City, that we would have families that need these turkeys? But we have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. It's incredible.
Okay, so you're kicking it off once again over at the market?
The market at Park City will be there today between 10 and 5. And the 2,500 turkeys are already on the dock waiting to be distributed. But what they're really waiting for is to be purchased. So we're out there collecting donations. Families love to go in and purchase a turkey and a bag of food and teach their children the fine art of giving. So they love to come in and participate. We see the community more and more getting involved in this, and it's so gratifying. And this is a Park City Board of Realtor annual event.
Yeah, so today, 10 to 5, tomorrow, 10 to 5 as well?
10 to 5, and after tomorrow at 5:30, the Utah Food Bank picks up their truck, and we're done.
Okay, so again, it's really just people not necessarily buying the turkey.
They can, absolutely. Mm. A lot of people like us to shop for them, and people give whatever they can, a couple bucks, $5, and we collect all the money together, and we go in and buy as many turkeys as we can with the cash that's been donated, and it just makes such a difference in our community and throughout the state.
Yeah, so how much, I mean, with 2,500 turkeys plus
we're looking fixins. At about $50,000 that we need to raise.
Yeah. And so, have you done that in the years past?
Every year, it's nip and tuck up until Friday in the late afternoon. We're actually smiling and dialing for dollars. But every year we get there, but it is always a challenge. And we're okay with that. We get it.
Yeah. You can, again, show up. But can people also donate online?
So we have a website, parkcityturkeydrive.info. So that's parkcityturkeydrive.info. And if you'll go to that website, there is a link to PayPal, and you can donate via PayPal, and lots of people have already. Thank you so much.
Okay. Again, so you've got, what, just a Board of Realtors members helping you out
yes,
for 2 days?
Yes, if you come to the market at Park City, everybody will be in a silly turkey hat like I have one on now. And we're getting all these turkeys ready. We have, we're distributing 1,200 today, 850 to our local food bank and 400 to a food pantry down in Riverton.
Okay. And again, so the majority staying here in the community.
A lot of them are staying right here in our own Park City, Summit and Wasatch counties. It's a big deal. And it's, I have to tell you folks, it's really magical, but very necessary what we do.
Okay. So people who have given you donations, that's going towards the turkey and any leftovers for the fixins or something.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. In fact, the market at Park City puts these really nice bags together of groceries. I think they're about $15, and it completes the Thanksgiving dinner. So it's pretty awesome. So we try to do our best to make sure every turkey has a table for Thanksgiving and everybody has a full tummy for this holiday season.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
No, just come by and see us. Love to see you and get your support. And this is a really fun community event, and Park City Board of Realtors are highly involved.
Okay. Yeah. And you warmed up for you. So
yep,
nice.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Deb.
Happy Thanksgiving.
KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning. Well, it was another successful Jan's Winter Welcome, raising the funds to help support our youth athletes. In the studio with a recap, I have Executive Director of the Youth Sports Alliance, Emily Fisher, along with Jana Dalton. She's got some news about the after school programs. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So, Emily, this was what, your second Jan's Winter Welcome?
Yep, my second Jan's Winter Welcome, and it was another very successful year and a really fun event.
Okay, how'd it go?
It went really well. We raised over $500,000 for our 7 member sport teams and the Stein Erickson Endowment for scholarships and our Get Out and Play and Activate programs. So, another really successful event, and just so thankful to the community and to our sponsors.
Okay, and that money is divvied up how?
So for Jan's Winter Welcome, our opportunity drawing ticket sales, our live auction items, and our silent auction items, all of the items that the teams bring in, then they get at 100%. So it's really nice for those teams because they don't have to have any expense, and we organize the event. They just need to shake the tree in the community to get those live and silent auction items. And Vail Resorts Epic Promise sponsors the opportunity drawing. So it's just a great way for those 7 member clubs to raise money and get it 100% back to their clubs.
Okay. Who won that drawing? And they're going to like the Tour de France?
Yes. So the opportunity drawing was a VIP trip for 2 for the Tour de France next summer, including airfare and lots of really fun things. And the winner was, her name is Jessica McClintus. I believe she's from Virginia. She bought 1 ticket. And I think it was her nephew is on the Park City Ski and Snowboard Freestyle team, Jason Ford. So really fun for him that he sold the winning ticket.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you got a date picked out already for 2019?
We sure do. We're excited to announce that 2019 will be Jan's Winter Welcome will be held on October 26th at Stein Erickson Lodge again. So looking forward to getting ready for that and planning again.
Yeah. And you, it's always a sellout. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. We usually sell out quite quickly. So it's just a great space, a great event, and everybody gets excited to go. So we're hoping to sell out again next year.
Okay. Jana, you also wanted to mention, I guess, what people can save money if they register now for some of the after school programs?
Yes. As a matter of fact, registration, our fees go up tomorrow for Get Out and Play. So be sure to register by tomorrow. And registration closes on December 1st. So be sure to get on our website and register your children for Get Out and Play.
Okay. So what have you got? What are you offering?
So the winter programs for Get Out and Play, we really have a whole variety. It's where we get our busiest in terms of programming. Heather Sims is running around making it all happen. So we have ice skating, we have alpine skiing, we have cross-country skiing, ski jumping, and freestyle skiing at the Utah Olympic Park. Just a whole variety. And then Activate has, again, just a whole variety of some outdoor and some indoor stuff for Activate.
Okay. And you also have other programs you wanted to talk about, Jana? Yeah.
Not really. We're, we do want to thank the community for a great Live PC, Give PC last Friday. It was one of our most successful ever. We ended up with close to 220 unique donors and over $13,000 raised for our club. So, really appreciative to the community for that great day.
Okay. Anything else, guys?
Nope. That's it. Mostly just if you're wanting to register for Get Out and Play, make sure you do that before tomorrow or by tomorrow as our fees go up. And then December 1st, those programs close. So just make sure ysaparkcity.org if you're interested in those programs.
Okay. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
Leslie.
You.